Kendrick.
As always, thank you, Mr. Big Voice. I am Laurie Kendrick. The regular cast of characters are here. Miss Martinez.
Hola.
Sean Tyler, our producer.
Hello.
And we have some very special guests tonight. Before we get to our guests, we have a little business to take care of. This is the night, Martha.
Yeah.
This is the night we find out who the lucky winners are, who will go with us to the live broadcast ghost hunting session and seance at the incredibly, wonderfully haunted Myrtle's Plantation in St. Francisville, Louisiana.
I'm excited!
You have exactly 30 minutes left to go to supertalk975.com. Go to the splash page. That is the one with the microphone and the word enter on it. We want you to enter the website eventually, but not today.
Not yet.
Scroll all the way down to the bottom to the Myrtle's Trip icon. It's a big rectangle at the very bottom of the page. Click on that, and it'll take you to a form. Fill that out, submit it, and it'll get to us. We will stop taking the entries at 7:30, exactly 29 minutes from now. Don't try to cheat. These are time-stamped.
Yep.
Greenwich Mean Time.
Yep.
We got it going on.
How mean.
And we will announce the winner at 8 o'clock. And there could be, I'm hearing, there could be a surprise involved.
A surprise?
I don't know.
What
they don't tell me anything here.
Surprise?
They don't tell me anything here. So anyway, go to supertalk975.com. You can also enter it through the show's official website, which is lauriekendrick.com. And that's spelled LaurieKendrick.com. And I think you can figure out com at this point of your cyber careers, everybody.
Hopefully.
All right. Other than that, what a show we have. We were going to be talking to a real, by God, Houston exorcist who was going to join us the last hour and a half of the show. Unfortunately, there was a problem within the family. He couldn't make it. He will be rescheduled. We're also going to be talking to Bianca, a young Houston woman, who will be joining us in studio to talk about an unusual... Okay, give me a verb here. Is it haunting? Is it a demonic possession? We will find out. Whatever the case, she has been plagued with some blackness and negativity in her house, and she has in her home here in Houston, and she has a very, very interesting story that will accompany that, and you're not going to want to miss that. And Bianca will join us around 8 o'clock. But my first guest, our first guest, is someone, unfortunately, we had to push back a couple of weeks ago.
Bless her heart, and she was kind enough to come back after we bumped her.
Yes, and that created such a row. People were going, but we want to know, because this topic she talks about is not discussed by anyone else. I think she really has the market cornered on this. And it's Pam Heath, and she is the author of Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife. And it is an incredible read. May I suggest it? I have a review copy. For more information on how to acquire this book, go to PamelaHeath.com. That's H-E-A-T-H. But don't take my word for it. Take it from the author's mouth herself. Pam Heath joins us now. Pam.
Yes.
Good evening. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so happy you came back. What anarchy caused when you didn't show that night. I'm so appreciative that you were willing to come back after being... after being bumped, as we say in the business. Pam, give us a little background. For one thing, you're not at all a stranger to this part of the country, are you?
No. I went to medical school at UTMB Galveston.
Medical school, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh.
And you were initially a pediatrician?
I did a pediatric internship, and then I switched and did an anesthesia residency.
Okay.
I still practice anesthesia today.
You still do. So, Dr. Heath.
Yes.
I will correct myself. I apologize.
And do you want to reveal where you live now?
I'm in the Bay Area.
Oh, San Francisco area.
Okay. Yeah.
And Dr. Heath, I have to tell you something. You and I had a serendipitous, kismetic, synchronicitous moment a couple of weeks ago. Martha knows about this. I have to share this with you before we go any further. I was preparing for the show on a Tuesday evening before the Friday you were supposed to appear.
Uh-huh.
And I was writing down some facts, some background on you, I was also watching Dead Famous on Biography. I had just written your name when Chris, the lovely blonde-haired, blue-eyed Hitler Youth-looking guy on the show, introduced you as you were touring, looking for Al Capone and Alcatraz.
Wow!
It was a microsecond after I had written your name. He said, and now joining us is Dr. Pam Heath.
Wow!
So that was it's like she has to be on. That's a sign. So anyway, that was a great episode.
Chris is a sweetie, and
isn't
actually,
he?
He did a great show on the Myrtle's Plantation, too.
I've not seen that.
Lot of stuff happened. It gets your audience all excited.
I tell you what, Doc, we are so excited about going. We'll be drawing the name very shortly. This is going to be just an incredible trip. You know something about, have you ever been there?
No, I haven't. I'd love to go sometime.
Well, you have to. There is a no refund policy that they make very clear, and they say on evenings when it storms, when there's meteorological events, that's when Chloe, the ghosts, and the ghosts of the children, are really active. So whoever wins tonight, pray for a thunderstorm. All right. So your book, an incredible topic, Dr. Heath, an incredible topic. I guess it's suicide, the ramifications, basically, of the soul when suicide comes into play, and how that affects the soul in the afterlife. Well, I guess my first question to you, as a woman of science and kind of an empirical prove-it-show-it-to-me kind of thing, how did you get into the parapsychological aspect of this?
Oh, gosh. I've been a doctor for quite a few years when I started having psychic experiences myself, and it was the sort of thing that was sort of undeniable.
Right.
And so I wanted to understand why I could do what I could do, and that started me on a long quest that I went back to grad school, which God knows I never intended to do when I finished medical school, and actually I spent 4 years getting a second doctorate degree for psychology. And my first book, The PK Zone, was sort of that journey of understanding mind over matter, how we can sometimes influence things around us.
PK, of course, meaning psychokinesis.
Correct.
Okay. And which is basically, for those of you not familiar with it, are we talking about forgive my simplistic definition, but Carrie, the movie Carrie, telekinesis,
psychokinesis? No, I actually know the anesthesiologist who was in Boston, and that had nothing like the truth. No, we're talking about spoon bending, firewalking, anomalous healing, all kinds of different things. And sports PK, which is very common, it's maybe part of home court advantage. But that was the first book, The PK Zone. And then one of the things, I got to know Dr. John Klimo, who's the world's foremost expert on channeling. He was the head of my dissertation committee and also the head of the parapsychology program. And he often sat me down in his office, and those who have ever been grad students will know you spend a lot of time in their office, and was talking about how he had once been asked by a psychologist to put together a bunch of readings about what really happens in the afterlife. So what people who say they've successfully committed suicide channel back through mediums and other sources and say, okay, this is what it's like. Because what the psychologist understood is if people really knew what they were getting into, most of them wouldn't do it.
Killing themselves.
Because that's the big message that comes through from the afterlife is don't do it. It's a mistake. It won't give you what you want. If anything, it makes it worse. And you take all of your psychological baggage, pain, depression with you.
It is self-murder.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's sort of interesting. One of the things about this book, if you read it, is it will talk a little bit about general afterlife experiences.
Mm-hmm.
And really all souls go through the same basic set of processing or experiences. They all have the transition. They all have the life review. They all have self-judgment. Most of them do some kind of spiritual work. If you believe in reincarnation, there appears to be, an opportunity to reincarnate and make things right. They all go through that. But what happens with suicide is the different stages are, delayed, prolonged, made worse because of all that psychological baggage and often depression that they take with them.
Which was the precursor to killing themselves in the first place, more often than not, right?
Yeah, we talk about all the different reasons people commit suicide, because one of the points I kind of wanted to bring home is that we're gonna set aside assisted suicide for now as an exception to this, but for most cases, people did not get what they wanted. I mean, sometimes they wanted attention, sometimes they just were going to get even with somebody, ha, 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 see, I'm going to kill myself, make you feel bad, almost no matter what the reason was that they did it, they didn't get what they wanted.
Hmm. And all this information, as it states in your book, was acquired vis-a-vis channeling sessions?
No, it wasn't. Because
not all of it?
Because anyone who knows anything about channeling knows that there's a problem for bias.
Right.
There's a big problem for bias in this material. And even when you do what we did and try to get material from as many different eras and many different sources as you can, the material is still going to be colored by the person who's transmitting it, just like the old-fashioned game of telephone.
Right.
And so what we also looked at was near-death experiences, past-life hypnotherapy regression, dream experiences. We tried to look at every every possible source of information that we could find to either confirm or refute, you know, to show whether this stuff, you know, what the channel material, is this really legit, or are other sources saying something different? And basically, there was tremendous common ground in terms of what they were all saying.
Dr. Heath, did you notice that the experiences, regardless of the means from which you derive the information, were pretty much one and the same, regardless of ethnocentricity, religious backgrounds, et cetera?
No, there was some bias. And in the book, we'll point out every once in a while that we aren't sure if this is bias of the medium. In a few cases, we aren't sure if the spirit talking through the medium is lying to us, okay?
Okay.
And it's the same thing that any person who does ghost investigations is going to find. The spirits do not have to tell the truth.
Spirits lie? Don't you have to have ego come into play to lie? Or does ego carry over onto the other side?
Ego carries over until you've finished your transition, certainly, and done all your life review and self-judgment. And sometimes I think even, you know, a little bit into the self-work that you see people do.
I was really hoping the self-judgment would stop.
So
my mother ingrained that in me.
Doctor, is it safe to say that where these people are is like limbo or purgatory, or is it something worse?
Like a way station?
Well, it seems to vary. This is one of the more interesting things about this material that I don't think I really thought about so much before I started writing this book, is that we really create our own realities on all levels of existence. So just like here on Earth, we can have rose-colored glasses and see what we expect to see. It becomes even worse of a problem in the afterlife in terms of seeing what you want to see or expect to see. And to a certain extent, we can limit, shall we say, what part of reality we see. And one of the things that guides in the afterlife sometimes have to do is sort of ease people into the truth of situations. And I would say one of the more, I'll have to say, amusing ways this happens is, for example, with the suicide bombers, who are sometimes greeted by spirit guides who are pretending to be virgins or holy men just to get them to cross over because, you know, if it's not what they expect to see, they won't see it.
Okay. Our number is 713-403-9750. Dr. Heath, will you take calls?
Uh-huh.
Very good. Joining us now from the city right here in Houston is Diane. Hi, Diane. You're on SoupNat Sat Friday Edition with Dr. Pam Heath.
Hey, Dr. Pam, and hey, Lori. Love your show.
Thank you, Diane.
I'm audio streaming you tonight from the office. I'm not sure, Dr. Pam, if this question would apply to you, and I may be off base, but about 30 years ago, I was engaged to this guy, and we were really close, but it kind of filtered into a friendship, and so I broke up with him, leaving him devastated.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years, I really tried to get in touch with him to see how he was doing because I really thought he was a great guy as a friend.
Mm-hmm.
And about a year ago, I finally was able to track down his father, and I found out about a year after we broke up, he committed suicide.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know, is there anything you can... I don't know if I feel responsible or I'm devastated or if I just want to put an end to it, but it's really on my mind about him committing suicide, and I think I'm feeling guilty.
Well, I don't think you're responsible. Okay, in the first place, I think all of us are responsible for our own lives and our own choices, and that's one of the points that I think spirits often talk about, is that some suicides don't like to take responsibility for their own actions, and in point of fact, they have to do that. That's a key part of being able to move forward in life, and so you cannot take responsibility for his decision. You can only try to be very mindful and thoughtful in the future interactions with people that you're sort of aware of the possible consequences, but at the same time, not responsible for them.
Continuing on with Diane's point, Dr. Heath, were there any messages for those left behind during channeling sessions, et cetera?
Yeah, there's a whole chat. We devoted two chapters to very specific topics.
Right.
One is to messages to those who want to take their own lives,
mm-hmm.
because I think it's very important that they hear from people who have firsthand knowledge of what it's like to do this. The other is messages to people left behind. And most of the time, the messages are very positive, such as that they're still loved.
So it goes with you.
And often there is a lot of forgiveness, and sometimes what they ask us to do is to let go of our guilt, like you're feeling, to let go of guilt, to let go of mm-hmm. grief, and to move forward, because that guilt and grief actually can hold them back in the afterlife and prevent them from being able to move on well.
So those who have passed have a complete emotional, run their emotional gamut. They're
usually,
still,
they
become, they're still sentient.
Of wanting us to forgive ourselves
okay.
and to forgive them for making the choice they made.
Okay, Diane, I would recommend Dr. Heath's book. It's really an incredible read and gets very, very specific. She even has devoted chapters to suicide bombers, as you mentioned early, and the religious aspects of suicide, martyrdom, etc. It's called Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife. Dr. Heath, can they go to your website and get some purchasing information?
Yeah, and of course it's available on Amazon and actually in local bookstores too.
Okay, again, Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife. And for more information on The Good Doctor, Pamela Heath, HEATH.com.
Diane, did that help you any?
It did. It really did, because I know that I don't need to feel the sense of loss that I feel because of any guilt.
No, let go of any grief or guilt or anger. I mean, usually that's one of the devastating effects of suicide. It's not just affecting the person who kills himself. It affects every single person around them and who knew them. And it's very important to let go of your own guilt, because all of us, you know, when you know somebody committed suicide, there's a part of you that goes, I wonder if I could have stopped it.
What if?
You got to let go of that.
And I appreciate it. I'm definitely going to get your book, because it sounds like it's really, really informational, and I would love to have it. And, Lori, love the show. Listen to your show every Friday and Saturday when it's on, and got some great guests.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me on.
Thank you, Diane.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Our number, again, is 713-403-9750. Dr. Pam Heath, author of an incredible book. It's really eye-opening. Martha gets it after me. It's really an incredible book, and I would recommend it. It is recommended reading on SoupNetSat. It's Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife. North Atlantic Books is on the spine, and you can get it through Amazon.com and also Dr. Heath's website, Pamela Heath, H-E-A-T-H, just like the bar. The candy bar, PamelaHeath.com. We got to take a break in a sec, Dr. Heath, but I want to ask you something before we go. I once read something that that Edgar Cayce, I believe, had said, and I'm simplifying this considerably, but he was talking about, like, Adolf Hitler, who had someone kill him at his own hand,
uh-huh.
who said he was in fetal position and forced for decades to contemplate all that he'd done. I may be simplifying this, but I'd like to hear your reaction to that concept when we come back.
Okay.
We're talking to Dr. Pam Heath, author of Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife. This is Supernatural Saturday Night, the Friday edition on Super Talk 97.5. Be back in a flash. Give us a call, 713-403-9750. 721 here in Houston. This is Super Talk 97.5, more specifically Supernatural Saturday Night, the Friday edition. Friday because of football season, and we don't want to lose any momentum. Happy birthday to this show, by the way. We are 8 weeks old tonight.
Yay!
Thank you, Sean Pryor, my producer, Martha Martinez. I am Laurie Kendrick. We could not be happier with the response we have gotten.
We're tickled.
We are, gang. And the response we've gotten from you, all of you entering the contest to go with us to the Myrtles Plantation in St. Francisville, Louisiana, you have got exactly 8 minutes left before this baby closes. So get your entries in. Go to supertalk975.com. Go to the splash page, the very first page, the one with the word enter on it. Scroll all the way down. Go to the Myrtles icon at the very bottom. Click it. Fill out the form. Submit it. And you are entered. We will stop at 7:30. We will draw the name at 8.
At 8.
Okay?
And we are going to have fun, huh? Now, we have to tell you again, you have to be 21 or over.
Yes. No exceptions.
And you have to be able to take off work that Tuesday and Wednesday, the 19th and 20th.
Of this month.
Of this month.
Okay. All right. Our guest this first hour is an incredible woman who we could spend hours talking to, Dr. Pam Heath, the author of Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife. This is a great book. It puts a perspective on the issue of suicide and introduced some things to me that I had never thought of before. Dr. Heath, thanks again for joining us.
Uh-huh.
Dr. Heath, I have a question. Is there such a thing as an accidental suicide? How is it How was it determined on the others? Yeah, an overdose, say, or drinking, alcohol poisoning, a heroin overdose,
accidental death at one's own hand.
Your stupid behavior caused it. You knew you were going to wind up on a slab someday.
Is there a heaven for dumbasses?
Yeah.
There are two issues with that. One is there are sometimes true accidents where people accidentally kill themselves, like you trip and the gun goes off and you kill yourself.
Yeah.
There's one case in that, and that's not really treated like suicide, okay? That's an accident. But when you're talking about drug overdoses or things where you're engaged in very risky behavior,
basically asking for it,
that is considered suicide because it's considered self-destructive.
Yeah. So they deal with the same torture on the other side?
Well, I don't like the word torture.
Well,
they deal with the same issues, the same problems. And,
okay,
in fact, I would recommend even for your ghost hunting friends that this is a good book to read because they're going to run into these spirits, and it helps for them to understand what these spirits are going through, how to communicate with them, how to help them move on.
And sometimes we talked earlier before the break about it. And again, I'm oversimplifying it. Edgar Casey, I believe it was, uh-huh, Edgar Casey's perception of Hitler being in fetal position, forced to contemplate what he has done, the incredible, horrific things he had done in his life.
The evil he perpetrated.
Evil. Exactly. What is that true in your opinion?
Well, I think there's going to be two aspects to that from what I could tell with the suicide bomber material. One is they can be aware of the hatred that's directed towards them from the living. And there was a lot of hatred at the end of World War II for Hitler. So
and is that a propellant?
He would have felt that.
Yeah, okay.
He would have felt that, and it could have been very, very painful for him.
Will that stay with him for eternity?
Not for eternity, no. For one thing, the living people gradually let go of that hatred, and then they don't have to feel it as intensely. The other thing he has to go through, though, is just like everybody else, he has to do a life review and self-judgment. He has to look at every single person who he harmed.
Amen.
And every person who was a relative of the person who he therefore harmed indirectly.
That's going to take some time.
The residual stuff.
They're saying it can take thousands of years to go through all this stuff. This is not a fast or easy process.
Mm.
And the spirit guides make sure that there are no shortcuts taken. You have to go through it. And they literally walk in the shoes of their victims. They literally feel what their victims went through.
Wow.
You know, I have to ask you a question. This is going to sound, silly, Dr. Heath, but I got to ask you, spirit guides, we hear a lot about that on this show, and we're, uh-huh, on sojourns of our own and, uh-huh, trying to figure this out ourselves, and I personally am still confused by it. Can you ever have, I'm scared to death, I'm going to get Ted Bundy, and I don't mean that, I don't mean to sound facetious. I am really convinced Genghis Khan, Napoleon, Hitler, and Ted Bundy, and Ed Gein are all my spirit guides. And how do you know you have good spirit guides? Is it luck of the draw?
Well, most of the time, people who become your spirit guides, from what I can tell, are people who care about you. They either,
okay,
knew you in a past life, or in some cases, they knew you in this life and died before you. A lot of us have grandparents with us. And the other thing I guess that some people don't realize is spirit guides can sort of come and go. It's not necessarily fixed.
They're not lifers.
It depends. Well, one may be, one or two may be, but
okay,
a lot of times they sort of float in and out as you need different kinds of information, different kinds of help.
Okay. What if, can they sense if you're easy? I mean, spiritually
if you're,
easy.
Yeah, if you're
not,
a psychic,
not carnally
easy.
Dr.
Z, yeah.
They can certainly sense if you're psychic. They're very much drawn to the light.
Hmm.
And they see those of us who are more spiritually developed as being brighter lights.
And they're drawn to that.
They're drawn. Yeah, I remember one time I was in the ER, and I saw a patient had been brought in, and they were doing CPR on him. And I knew they weren't going to succeed because I could see the soul standing over in the doorway watching the whole thing. And I'm like, it ain't going to work till the soul rejoins the body. Didn't happen. They pronounced the patient dead, and I'm talking to the soul mentally. You don't have to talk out loud. You can just think it. And I said, you need to go to the light.
Yeah.
So I start going down the hallway back to the operating room, and the soul starts following me.
And I'm like, no, no, you need to go to the light. And it's like, it was following the light. It was following me. Big light. So they do see us as lights. They are drawn more towards people who are psychic.
Okay. 2 minutes, by the way. 2 minutes left before the contest for the models is over. Dr. Heath, I got to ask you. You're a Missouri girl.
Yes.
Okay. Motto of that state, show me.
Yes.
You are a physician, a woman of science, a woman of medicine. We touched on this at the very beginning. You're as a physician, empiricist, kind of.
Yeah.
Was the experience you had on the Navajo Reservation, which really kind of altered your life, did that conflict with the show me, what do I know, what do I think concept of medicine and science?
Now, wait a minute. You have to go back and tell us the whole story of the Navajo Reservation experience, please.
I actually went there after I realized I was psychic.
Oh, it was after that, okay.
I was working at the time in Orlando, which is near Casadega, which is a spiritualist camp, and I was having all these experiences I couldn't figure out, and I found a psychic to go to that sounded like the real deal, and not someone who just did cold readings, and being very suspicious and skeptical. And I went to this guy, and he leaned out the door. He said, yes, you really are psychic. We have lots to talk about, you know. And he ended up becoming a friend, and I started taking lessons in healing, spiritual healing, from his foster sister for about 6 months. The problem I was running into was living in a city like Orlando, I was having a problem with shielding sort of the press of so many minds so close to mine. I needed to get out, and I'd, since third grade, had visions of the Navajo Indian Reservation, and so I thought I would sort of follow a long-standing dream of mine and go out and work on the Navajo Reservation, and I was the chief of anesthesia in Chinle for a couple years.
And Chinle is where?
It's in the heart of the Navajo Indian Reservation in the Four Corners area.
Right.
Just after the big hantavirus outbreak. Interesting time.
Lucky you.
It was actually kind of fun. The CDC guys were really bright.
I bet so. How has this helped your bedside manner as a physician, this intuitiveness?
Oh, it's been a big help to sometimes know what people are afraid of, particularly as an anesthesiologist. You usually only have about 5 minutes to gain their trust and to help them let go of whatever fears they have. And sometimes they can't verbalize those fears. And if you can sort of intuitively pick up what it is you need to address to put them at ease, it really can be very helpful.
Very good. Our number is 713-403-9750. Dr. Pam Heath, author of Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife. An incredible read. I suggest you get it if you have any questions about suicide, especially those of you who had family members and loved ones who have taken their own lives. And I would also recommend it for those of you who have ever contemplated it yourself. You will understand that a panacea, suicide is not. Debbie joins us now from right here in Houston. Debbie, you're on the SuitNet Sat with Dr. Pam Heath.
Hi, Dr. Heath.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a question. My father committed suicide about 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And what can we do as survivors here and in the here and now to help that soul? Like, is there anything we can do here? I still carry, I guess, grief. In a mild sense, in that, you know, I guess it's more of a missing him, but it's the moving on, and moving on is something that you just do day by day, but you never forget it.
Mm-hmm.
And so what can we do as survivors to help that soul move on? Is there anything? Prayer?
Yes, there is. Prayer does seem to work. And in fact, almost every soul will ask for prayer, and they will note that prayer is almost like a physical force in the afterlife, that it can be very, very powerful.
Okay.
The other thing that you can do is recognize that you don't need to go to a psychic to be able to communicate with those in spirit. And point of fact, a lot of times they will come to visit us in dreams and sleep. And so if, as you're going off to sleep, you sort of invite them to come visit you. And maybe even mentally have this conversation that you forgive them and you want them to do well.
Okay.
You may find that they will actually pass messages on to you. A number of the messages that are in this book were passed on during dreams. Again, You don't have to be a known psychic or medium to be able to communicate with those who love you.
Okay. Okay, that's very helpful. I thank you so much.
Debbie, get the book. You know, I don't hawk a lot of stuff on this show, but really this book will provide you with such an incredible perspective.
I will. I thank you so much.
You're more than welcome, Debbie. Thanks for tuning us in. Dr. Heath, appreciate you taking that call. Our number is 713-403-9750. By the way, contest over. Don't even try to enter it now because every entry is time stamped. Greenwich Mean Time.
We be mean.
And so don't even try. So
we really mean it.
We're going to draw at 8 o'clock. And, you know, I got to ask you something, Dr. Heath, as I've been talking to a lot of people over the past 8 weeks, but I need something answered with regard to spirit guides and our relatives who surround us and protect us from negativity. Where were the spirit guides that belonged to 3,000 innocent people on 9/11? Explain that to me.
Well, this is going to be controversial, but one of the things that we were told is that a lot of those people volunteered for that task.
I don't get it. Help me understand. Is it martyrdom? I've been told this before, and I don't get it. JonBenet Ramsey, other little children who were raped, tortured, and murdered.
No, I'm not going to include them in this.
Okay.
We're just going to talk about 9/11.
Okay. All right.
In certain cases, in catalytic, what they call catalytic events, because
right.
it can affect all of us so powerfully, groups of souls will choose to reincarnate for purpose of helping, spiritually helping those of us, you know, who survived. And the way they helped was, yes, by dying in that situation. What we're also told is that they benefited directly themselves from dying in that manner.
Would it be considered?
Which is, like, really weird to say, and I know it's the kind of thing, this may almost be too close to September 11th to talk about this.
And also maybe perfect timing to talk about it. Would it be considered martyrdom in effect?
No, it wasn't martyrdom. It had to do with so many people from different cultures dying at the same time that they actually became enmeshed and let go of personal stories and were able to see all the different perspectives, all the different viewpoints, and let go of their own narrow view of reality, that it actually spiritually springboarded them forward in terms of being able to skip a lot of the processing that goes on in the life review and self-judgment. And, I mean, it really sounds weird, and I'm sure it's controversial with people, but it benefited them.
I get it to a degree. I mean, is this something that these people chose innately decades ago or something they chose
they
for
chose
the moment?
Before they incarnated.
Okay.
Before, that's what we're told. Is not all of them. Not all of them. But the majority of them chose that before they incarnated, knowing they were going to be part of that event, and what, you know, the probable consequences were, both to their individual soul and in terms of the spiritual benefit, shall we say, by helping the world pull together in that event. Because, those of us who survived that, and I know, like everyone else, I can remember exactly what I was doing that morning. We pulled together. I mean, it was just amazing what happened around the world after that.
There was a definitive unification. Oh, yeah. I just would hate to think that 3,000 people simply woke up that day to die. I can't wrap my head around that.
What about the survivors who, rather than having a spiritual awakening of sorts due to this huge tragedy, what about the survivors who've turned almost towards the dark side, who've been filled with hatred and a feeling, a need for revenge, and they want to kill and they want to, I don't know. It just seems like some people have turned more negative rather than towards the good.
And one of the things that came up, and I don't think it made the final part of the book, is the spirits mentioned that we didn't get the lesson. We didn't learn what we were supposed to do.
And they said that the
lesson was going to therefore have to be repeated on a larger scale.
What was the lesson, Dr. Heath? Do you have any idea?
It was that we're supposed to be one. We're supposed to be as one in terms of humanity. We're supposed to be considerate of the needs and feelings of others and let go of this sort of personal story. We all collect personal stories. I'm tall, I'm short, I'm fat, I'm thin, whatever. We all collect a whole host of personal stories in life. One of the things you have to do when you make your transition in the afterlife is let go of those stories so that you can actually reveal the underlying soul, the pure soul, which transcends all of those stories as part of spirit. I hope I'm explaining this. And part of 9/11 was, of course, the people suddenly realizing we can come together, we can let go of hatred, we can work together, we can, just like after Katrina, which, by the way, I'm suspicious, was the second lesson when we didn't get it the first time. Because they said the next lesson was going to be a natural event because people couldn't blame as much the natural event.
And obviously, Dr. Heath, we didn't quite learn from that either.
No.
So, but, good Lord, what's next?
I don't know. I'm a little scared.
Hang up, Dr. Heath. I'm scared.
We're scared.
But what I just said is also part and parcel of what you're talking about. You can't put your head in the sand either.
No. And they say also that a lot of thought is contagious, and we actually affect people around us much more powerfully than we think.
Yeah.
As we work through our stuff, as we find forgiveness for ourselves and forgiveness for others, and we let go of our hatred and start to sort of move forward spiritually, we impact not only everybody immediately around us in a very powerful way, but we can impact everybody on the planet. And part of why we included all this book on the suicide bomber material is that we're seeing a tremendous increase in suicide murder, whether it be the Columbine, you know, killing or others. It's just become almost an epidemic in some ways. And they're saying, yes, this thought is epidemic. So certain people need to turn around and say, I'm going to be the antidote for that. I'm going to counteract that with positive thoughts, with loving thoughts, with forgiveness.
I love it. I think I hate to have to say that I think that's almost a utopian concept, but I sure as hell wish I didn't have to say that. I really wish that message were...
I don't think it's easy.
It's just in the short time we've been doing this and, you know, and some of the experiences I've had in my life, it's real hard to let go, to kind of discard what everything you've known and to come to terms with one day waking up and realize you've lived most of your life wrong.
Well, it's all a process. You know? You have to look at it as a process. We're all growing and learning and developing and it really, you know, journey is important.
That's true.
It's Supernatural Saturday night, the Friday night edition. This is Super Talk 97.5. Lori Kendrick, your host. I'm Martha Martinez, helping out a little bit. And we're speaking with Dr. Pamela Heath, author of Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife. If you'd like to call us, it's 713-403-9750. You can no longer enter the contest. If you haven't written in, you ain't going to get to go to the Myrtles with us. Sorry.
And we're going to have the drawing in just a few minutes. That's about T-minus 18 and counting. Again, Dr. Heath's book is a must-read for anyone anyone who's alive.
Dr. Heath, I wanted to continue a little bit with our earlier caller, Diane, who was worried about someone who had departed. And for any of us who've lost a loved one or even just an acquaintance through suicide, does prayer on this side help them on the other side? Our prayers for them, does that help them further along?
That's probably one of the most consistent messages we got, is that, yes, prayer makes a big difference. They feel it. They ask for it. And they say it can actually almost be seen like certain rainbow colors of light in their realm. So it almost has like a physical presence in the afterlife.
Wow. That's weird.
Very powerful. And in fact, that is what I would do to help counteract terrorism, would be pray.
Well, I think some of us did a lot of that after 9/11. I think a lot of people did that during Katrina. And I know here in Houston, a lot of us did that prior to Rita. Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling that could have been what, you know, I hate to say it, but could have deflected, you know, from Houston.
Taking sort of an informal poll, all of our guests were asking, is it possible that all of us praying together might have had some sort of power over actually turned the storm away, because we got millions of people here.
And we hated the fact that it went to Beaumont, Port Arthur, the Golden Triangle, Lake Charles. I hate that, and we have a big audience in that part of the country.
Yeah,
I am so sorry.
We love them dearly.
But with the infrastructure that Houston has and almost 6 million people in the greater Houston area, take that, Chicago.
Yeah.
The situation could have been considerably worse had it taken a direct hit on Houston.
Yeah.
So while I hate that our brethren and sisterin...
Well, you certainly didn't intentionally send it their way. Is
oh,
the thing.
No, so exactly.
What I would say is it's pretty interesting that it does appear that groups of people can do mind over matter of weather. And one of the studies that sort of indicates this was one done in Tampa, where for, I don't know how many years, 70, 80 years, they've had a special festival every year in the middle of rainy season, of course, mm-hmm. where they have 3 replicas of the Spanish ships coming into the harbor. And all the years they've done this festival, not once has it ever rained on that day. And when you look at the statistics of how often it rains the day before and how often it rains the day after, it should have rained at least once.
That is so Catholic.
And
I love it.
And some people feel that certainly groups of people can therefore do weather piquet. It's not just the old rain dance,
mm-hmm.
which I did visit back in 1979, and it did start raining at the end of the dance.
Isn't that just incredible?
Wow. And then there were blue skies at the start of it, clouds.
And you got to admit it, Dr. Heath, that coincidence doesn't always happen. You know what I'm saying?
Well, you notice it, and you say it's not proof, but it's very interesting.
Well, let's call it pudding then. 713-403-9750. Doc, they are lining up to talk to you. Let's go to some questions, shall we?
Mm-hmm.
Tracy from Richmond, you're on SoupNet Sat with Dr. Pam Heath.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Mm-hmm.
My question was basically, you talked about the victims of 9/11 perhaps choosing that fate for this cause for themselves, and I would assume that that would also apply to the victims of the Holocaust. With that being said...
I don't know about that. I didn't look into that.
Okay, well, I guess that my curiosity with that being is how would that affect even the martyrs, even the guys who drove the planes in the building, how would that affect their life transitioning or their process after they've passed.
So the question's about genocide.
Right. Well, certainly in the case of the 9/11 suicide bombers, there was one fellow who claimed to have been in the plane that we all are assuming was going towards D.C. that went down in Pennsylvania.
Flight 93.
And it's interesting, he said they all felt like they were drowning. This, from the terrorist perspective, when there was that mass death, they felt like they were drowning because they became overwhelmed with impressions from their victims and seeing everything from their victim's viewpoint. And I can tell you what, they really didn't like that feeling. Literally felt like they were drowning, losing their identity. Ironically enough, it did help them spiritually compared to other suicide bombers who deal only with killing people of the same culture mindset. And so they actually, granted, we're not talking about them having, fast, easy transitions or anything, but they actually got a little bit of a leg up compared to their colleagues who, for example, in Iraq are killing other Iraqis, and everybody who dies has the same basic mindset. There's less of a culture shock for them to deal with when they're crossing over.
Okay. You get Martha, did you hear that?
Yeah. Did that make any sense?
That made sense to me.
It does.
And I'm a blonde.
Okay. Answer your question is the next thing.
It does. I was just, wondering as far as the transitioning for Hitler, knowing it's almost like a preordained thing, and that if that was the case, that these people chose that fate, how does that affect their transition? And yes, you did answer that.
They do have difficult, generally speaking, if you harm others, you're going to have a more difficult transition because you have to look at every victim you harmed and the impact of what the impact was of harming them on everybody that person knew and everybody that person would have met and would have helped in life that you prevented by killing them. We're talking about huge amount of material they have to work through.
It is not an easy task.
Okay.
At all.
So we're talking collaterally and peripherally.
Yeah.
And all that, those imply. Oh, good Lord.
Right.
Okay.
We're talking a tremendous amount of stuff they have to work through.
Tracy, did that help?
Yes, it did.
Thank you
so
much. Appreciate it, Tracy. Larry, our number is 713-403-9750. Dr. Pam Heath, author of Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife, is our guest this first hour. Larry from Houston has a question for you, Dr. Heath. Hi, Larry.
Hello. How y'all doing?
Fabulous.
Okay, great. Dr. Heath, I was wondering about, people, when they commit suicide, a lot of it's just that day and, whatever action they take to take their lives. But
yeah.
I want to ask about people that, like, drink themselves to death or use drugs to the point of death. Is that a form of suicide? And what type of, what kind of agony or what kind of crossover is that for those souls?
Yeah, this is that kind of risk-taking behavior, and including, by the way, driving too fast.
Oh.
And other kinds of risk-taking. Oh, the choking game. That's a big one. That's become quite an epidemic in this country. Kids who are strangling themselves in order to get a sexual high. Those are all forms of suicide. And, again, understand, it's not like other people have to judge them, but they do have to judge themselves. They have to deal with their issues that led to that. People who have physical addictions to drugs or alcohol sometimes have a psychological addiction that carries over into the afterlife, such that they may want to hang around other addicts and encourage them to use more so they can sort of vicariously get high by being around these people who are getting high.
Martha, that answers
so many. So they can
actually
cause some harm. And this is something we talk about in the book a little bit, that there are cases where these people can actually, shall we say, almost haunt the living.
Doctor?
Encourage them to bad behavior, yeah.
You send up shivers up my spine when you say that. I'm a recovering addict. As a matter of fact, I'm getting ready to walk into an AA meeting. But when
God
I used,
bless you.
But when I used to get high, I would feel these spirits, and they would touch me and communicate with me, and it even fueled my addiction, which was even worse than just alcohol. But the fact of the matter is, man, you answered my question to the dot. So
yeah, it could have been quite real. They do that. And, in fact, I think that's one of the hazards of using drugs and alcohol is it kind of lowers your barriers, your natural psychic barriers to spirits, and I think makes you more vulnerable.
Well, Doc, that's why they call alcohol spirits.
Yeah.
It's
thank
true.
You so much.
It
thank
is
you.
True.
Larry, Godspeed
Larry.
To your recovery.
We're with
thank
you.
Thank you so much.
Congratulations on staying clean and sober.
Oh, it's the best thing I've ever done in my life. I'm just so happy with my life now. I never thought I could be happy without taking a drink, but you know what? It's okay.
Larry, isn't it amazing how you are in control of your perspective, and you never thought you ever could be.
Yeah, I'm growing up for the first time in my life, and I'm just so thankful. So thank you for everything, and y'all, what a great show.
Thank you, Larry.
Many blessings, Larry.
Doctor, isn't that wonderful? What a success story his life is. Now, see, Dr. Heath, that leads me to this question. What was he in a former life that led him to addiction and recovery in this one? What about the karmic retribution?
Oh,
if that applies.
There's no way to know, for sure, unless you did past life readings, what led a single individual to something. But I guess my concern is more that suicide is something that can carry over from one life to another. And there has been some past life reincarnation data out of the University of Virginia that suggests if you have committed suicide in past lives, you're more prone to do it in this one. And a number of souls do talk in the book about having had a tendency in earlier lives to commit suicide that makes them a little bit more vulnerable. And, of course, each time you reincarnate, you face the same problems that you tried to escape last time. If anything, those problems are maybe made a little bit tougher.
Okay.
Yes, if you're supposed to overcome them.
We got to take a quick break. When we come back, Dr. Heath, I want to talk to you about the expediency of reincarnation. Is it automatic? Sometimes is it, as Edgar Cayce implied, takes decades, maybe even a century? Okay. Let's talk about that when we come back. This is Supernatural Saturday Night, the Friday edition. Time for a few more calls with Dr. Pam Heath, our very special guest this hour. 713-403-9750. Be right back. before 8 o'clock on this fabulous Friday evening, the Friday edition of Supernatural Saturday Night. Laurie Kendrick, Martha Martinez, my producer, Sean Tyler, we're all here. Our special guest is Dr. Pam Heath, an anesthesiologist and doctor of parapsychology, who just penned the book, Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife. Dr. Heath, thank you so much for your time tonight. What a learning experience this has been. Hey, Dr. Heath, can people come back as animals?
I don't know. I'll give you an honest answer there.
Okay.
I don't know. Off the record.
Like shape-shifting, does that apply?
Oh, no, I don't think that's the same
as shape-shifting. That's something different, okay.
Yeah, no, I don't know. You know, the whole thing on reincarnation is a little controversial. Different channels, different mediums, especially depending on what era they were writing, gave very different answers. Earlier ones, we're talking 1700s, 1800s, early 1900s, for the most part did not believe reincarnation existed. And they just stated it doesn't happen. Later mediums, when you start looking, and we looked actually at a number of modern mediums, including John Edward and James Van Praagh and, you know, some other big names. Modern mediums pretty much all take it as a fact. And from what I can tell, as best I can tell, reincarnation is a matter of choice in terms of who or what you do, although you will be strongly encouraged to deal with certain things. Suicides, for example, will have to face the same problems that they tried to run away from by killing themselves.
If they don't learn it in the next life.
That's right. It's like a grade. If you flunked that grade, you got to go back and repeat it.
So it's not a progression each lifetime, necessarily.
Ideally, it should be,
ideally,
but not always.
Ideally, it's a progression, but not always.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of individual tailoring. You know, it appears that we often do plan what basic things we want to look at in life and that we're given the basic resources we need. We're given the encouragement. But, you know, sometimes it's still not enough for us to make it through if we'd like.
Yeah. I'm hip. Who did I piss off in another life to come back as a radio host?
Yikes.
Good God. Gloria joins us now, our last call for Dr. Heath. Hi, Gloria from Brenham.
Yes, hi. I'm glad you took my call.
Go ahead.
Okay, what I wanted to know, say in another life, you might have been in a medical field or whatever. Would that carry over into another life, like into another reincarnated life? Like, I have a strong desire just to be able to heal people and help people.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering, would that carry on from another life?
It's just all that damn science.
Yeah.
Shall we say interests and aptitudes can both carry over. When you look at some of these musical geniuses, a lot of people feel they were famous musicians in previous lifetimes. And what will happen is certain souls will sort of take a theme, and they'll work on certain things, either because they simply enjoy them a great deal or because they want to refine their knowledge of it, and they'll work on that for a number of lifetimes, a whole series of lifetimes.
I believe that.
Okay.
Okay.
That's what I was wondering. I just caught the tail end. I turned the radio on, I caught you, and I was so interested in it. That's why I had to get in.
Gloria.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all. You know, and a lot of times also, if you have a strong interest in a certain, you know, distant country or something, it may be because you had a past life.
Yeah, well, I did. Well, see, I had, you know how you go to different people and you have readings or you do different things? And this one lady told me that I was disobedient to my husband in a past life, and I was burned at the stake because, and then I went, what? And I went, oh, my God. And, you know, the more I thought about it, I said, you know, that really, yeah, I am. I'm very open-minded, and I voice my opinion strongly. So I said, okay, I can understand that when I tell somebody. They said, oh, I can see that happening to you in a past life. But then I was wondering about the medical field because I love helping people, and that's always been my desire.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I was just wondering, would that carry over from the past?
It could be, or it could be that just when you were writing your life blueprint, that was one of the things you really wanted to do this lifetime.
Okay.
And therefore you sort of put that in your mind, shall we say, that this would be something that would really draw you.
In your psychic quiver.
Okay.
Gloria, thank you for your call.
Okay, thank you.
Sure. Thank you. You as well. Dr. Heath, what a joy it has been. Will you come back and answer more queries sometime?
Yeah.
You're a fascinating woman. The book is incredible. I advise everybody to read it. It's Suicide, What Really Happens in the Afterlife.